Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and once again it's my privilege and pleasure to be joined by Dr. Nick Begich, who along with Gene Manning has co-authored the vitally important recent book Angels Don't Play This Harp, subtitled Advances in Tesla Technology, published in soft cover by the Earth Pulse Press. Dr. Begich, you and your co-author have lifted the curtain on a truly revolutionary military project, one which has a number of applications. We've discussed some of them, such as missile defense and deep and broad-based reconnaissance, the altering of the weather for military purposes, and a number of other possible applications of Project HARP. Again, a project in which the military is going to be using a phased antenna array to broadcast energy into the upper atmosphere. One of the genuinely terrifying applications of Project HARP that you discussed the possibility of being enacted is the possible applications of this technology to the science of mind control, something we alluded to in connection with MK Ultra in the last part of the interview. Could you develop some of the possible mind control applications at greater length for us?
Sure. Let's kind of go back in time a little bit here and talk about sort of the history of that whole concept. And it really originated with our returning POWs from the Korean conflict. And what was noted at that time was that behavioral changes in these prisoners of war that were just substantial. I mean, folks that were, patriotic Americans coming back, handing out communist leaflets on street corners with no explanation, total changes in behavior. And this got the interest of the intelligence community to start to look into this. And then when you progress up into the Vietnam era, there was actually a device captured during that time, and it was a machine, the LIDA machine, and it was actually developed by the Russians for the use of interrogating prisoners of war in Vietnam. This particular device put prisoners of war into a trance state, which made it much easier to extract intelligence from them, and it was using an electromagnetic signal. Since that time, a great deal of development has taken place both in the East and the West in this particular area of mind control. In the 60s and into the early 70s, a major effort by the CIA, MK Ultra, which we had mentioned earlier, was initiated, and this actually was reported in June 1975. It was a CIA commission report which was put together for the President of the United States at the time, and it was sort of the aftermath of Watergate, where there was also CIA involvement. And what was found is that using LSD and chemical means, as well as hypnosis and whatever other means that were available to them, they tested these ideas of mind control. And what has come out since then, in 1969, there was a book published called Unless Peace Comes, and there was a chapter within that book by J.F. Gordon MacDonald, who was a professor of geophysics at UCLA and also a science advisor to President Lyndon Johnson. He was a specialist in geophysical warfare, and what he suggested at the time was if they could electronically stroke the ionosphere in just the right way, they could create a returning signal that could actually debilitate people over a very broad area. And this particular scientist, as he spoke about that, it was later amplified a year later by Zbigniew Brzezinski in a book called Between Two Ages, A Technotronic Era. And this was an important work because he essentially was saying the same thing. If you could electronically stroke the ionosphere in just the right way, you could create behavior modification. And for those that may not remember, Zbigniew Brzezinski was a national security advisor to Jimmy Carter. Now, since then, and coming much more current, in 1985, there was a document put together by Maxwell Air Force Base called Low Intensity Conflict and Modern Technology, which suggested that using a rapidly scanning pulsed radio transmitter, you could modify behavior of humans over a battlefield area to the point in which they would be combat ineffective. In other words, totally incapable of waging war. Now, this kind of technology was recently demonstrated on a 60 Minutes broadcast earlier this year, where the military actually disclosed this as a breakthrough in non-lethal weapons technology. And what we have with HARP, particularly in the earth-penetrating tomography applications, which are going to be operating within the 1 to 20 hertz range, which happens to correlate to the predominant brain waves of human beings, this is a big concern because research at Yale University conducted by Jose Delgado over 30 years demonstrated that using radio frequency within this range, you could create behavior modification to the point in which it was almost like turning emotions on, like turning on a light switch from anger to passive behavior, just on and off. And this was demonstrated in both humans and primates without any connections to the body whatsoever. And this is, a world-renowned researcher, and we footnote throughout our work each of these sources and indicate where people can go for additional information. Now, since publication of the book, there's been a couple of projects that have been published by the military. Spacecast 2020, a forward look into the direction of military technologies, where all of these things are discussed. In fact, they go much beyond them and actually talk about the idea that at some point the technologies will be available to actually put in what they call experience sets, or full memories, as if they were artificial memories, into individuals. And this is technology that's being spoken about now in military planning circles, these more advanced type systems. Right now what they're capable of doing is basically debilitating human beings by overriding their brain function. And the amount of energy necessary to do that is actually quite small. 1/50th, 1/50 of what the Earth naturally produces in energy is sufficient, provided the energy frequency hits these specific window frequencies that are biologically active. And that's where, again, we're very, very concerned that it's either an intentioned or a side effect, but certainly an effect that's been long sought and is currently being sought by the military.
A couple of points in passing. Again, there may be listeners who will be sort of astounded by this and might be somewhat skeptical that such technologies could actually be developed, or that this experimentation might have been going on. As you mentioned, the documentation on the history of mind control experimentation by our national security establishment is extensive, and in fact, former Director of Central Intelligence Richard Helms ordered much of that documentation on Project MK-Ultra, MK-Naomi, Project Bluebird, Project Artichoke, destroyed prior to some of the congressional investigations of the mid-1970s. Now, you mentioned a project or something called Spacecast 2020.
Right. This was a program put together using 350 scientists, both civilian and military, to sort of look to the year 2020 in terms of what military technology would yield and the directions military technology should take. Now, most of that, it was a 1,600-page report, of which only a summary was released. And in those summary documents, they actually talk about these initiatives. And I can tell you, the military doesn't talk about initiatives unless they're already underway to some extent. And in this case, mind control technologies go back a long way. We were very careful to footnote over 350 footnotes in our book, drawing from primarily military documents and mainstream media reports, International Red Cross documents, and others, to draw this issue out, because this is an issue that is fundamental to our objection on this project. Whether it's an intentioned effect or a side effect, anything that could potentially alter the way Americans think or anyone thinks, that is a foundational constitutional issue from our perspective, and one that deserves absolute public debate, and one that we don't need to know exactly how it works, but we certainly need to debate the outcomes of these types of weapons technology before they move much further, because this direction is the very beginning of a very large initiative, a revolution in military affairs, as they call it, and one that, one that we need to be debating, we need to be considering as Americans.
Amen. We would, I want to note in passing that you alluded to Dr. Jose Delgado. He's a well-known researcher, and what is not as well-known, though, is that his research was funded to a large extent by military intelligence, Air Force and Navy intelligence.
Right. Yeah, this is the problem with so much of our science. When you look at the national budget and how much is flowing from military planners, essentially, if you want to be a scientist in the United States, you better be ready to develop weapons technologies to a great degree. And this is an unfortunate side effect of the Cold War, because in conjunction with that are the national secrecy orders that keep these kinds of public debates from happening. What's changed, of course, is the ability to reach out and gather large amounts of information as individuals, which is what we've done, and put that out to the public in a much more aggressive and progressive way. And, it doesn't mean that we're going to uncover the whole thing, because we think we just hit the tip of the iceberg, but sufficiently so that we can raise the kind of public debate that needs to happen. And this whole idea that we need to root out these kinds of things this is a major problem that we're all facing and one that we need to start confronting because technologies are advancing so rapidly in all areas that we have to have a way to make sure we have accountability by our bureaucrats within this system.
One thing that is not well known to a great many people is the fact that electromagnetic radiation has a profound effect on the human body and on the human nervous system, and this is one of the things that looms very large in the background of Project HARP. Dr. Begich, as simply as possible, and perhaps that's a tall order given the complexity of the technology, could you explain again for the layperson as best you can how the Project HARP technology would affect the nervous system and accomplish some of these mind control and human being stunning effects that you alluded to earlier?
Sure. What can happen and what has been shown to be possible is using frequencies that resonate or harmonize with specific chemical elements within the body, what you can cause is a ion movement within the cells. More, put more simply, what you create is chemical reactions using harmonizing frequencies, if you will, to keep it simple. And what then occurs is you get this amplification effect. By way of example, every one of us has a certain amount of iodine within our bodies, and it's usually a low amount that's not considered dangerous. In fact, it's necessary. But if you resonate a frequency in that corresponds to iodine, you can create the effects as if you had ingested a massive dose, a harmful or toxic dose. And yet when they do blood workups and so forth on you, they're not going to find iodine in unusual quantities, but the effects are going to be there, the chemical reactions that would naturally occur by a toxic amount can be induced by electromagnetic means. Now what you have with HARP is something that either inadvertently or purposely could be used in this way to create changes within the brain chemistry or within our physiology that would result in debilitating effect. And this is exactly what the military has designed in not just this system, but also smaller systems designed to work on a tactical level. And why this is so important, this basic research that recognizes that human beings are electromagnetically mediated. I mean, we start out as energy, then atoms, then molecules, then body parts, and then the body. And so what affects us at an energy level, you know, people think of being violated by a bullet. Well, being violated electromagnetically might be more damaging and might be less detectable initially, but its effects can nevertheless be just as strong. And when you think about it in these terms, you're looking at a technology that can be used for good or bad, because the same basic science is sort of the root of why acupuncture works and a number of these other healing modalities work, because they recognize these energy grids within the human body that the military also recognizes. The difference is the money flows to the military establishment for creating weapons rather than to the healing establishment for creating cures.
This acts as something of a bridge to another possible application that you and your co-author discussed. In addition to rendering the human mind ineffective, you discussed the possibility that Project HARP could also have toxic effects or produce toxic effects deliberately on human beings. And you allude to something called cyclotronic resonance. Again, for the benefit of the layperson, what is that, and how does that relate to the possible disabling of the human physiology?
Essentially, it's the same kind of situation as we just discussed. And what happens here, it can affect you on a DNA level. It can actually cause alterations in the DNA. And this is, again, another problem, is when you look at, and this is not just our research. This is the military's own research indicating this through the citations that we mentioned earlier and others. You know, they recognize full well what the capability is. The difference is they fail to acknowledge it. And part of that may be, and most likely is, they compartmentalize the research. On the HARP program, for instance, there are no biological scientists, no electrophysiologists. All as there are is atmospheric physicists and electrical engineers. I mean, essentially mechanics, if you will, as opposed to biological scientists. And if they had the right contingent of biological scientists with the right background, these other potentials and risks would be quite clear. What's happening is the research for developing what they call now non-lethal weapons using electromagnetic means are developed in one lab across the country, and then the research is applied to the various weapon systems that are being developed. This is the way weapons technologies are developed in the United States. And what you have with HAARP is potentially the largest delivery system of a non-lethal technology ever contemplated by man, and one that rings of Zbigniew Brzezinski's projections as far back as the early 70s.
Perhaps non-lethal belongs in quotes.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a misnomer. And when you look at how things are named and how they're used in the case of non-lethal weapons, this is a concept we start to see in the last few years in the major media, and they usually talk about sticky glues and nets and things that dissolve rubber tires, and sort of as an afterthought they mention and microwave weapons, electromagnetic weapons, and they kind of skip over it. Those are the weapons to be concerned about. Those are the systems that are going to be the most profound, and those are the systems that represent the revolution in military affairs, which is the latest concept in military planning circles. And what they suggest is that the technologies are shifting so fast and so rapidly, it's likened to the introduction of gunpowder to the West or the introduction to the nuclear age. The technologies are being developed now, and yet they're not being debated now, which is when it needs to happen. These technologies are going to change the complexion of warfare forever, and it's, again, profoundly important that we get engaged, because what military planners have said, there's a document, The Revolution in Military Affairs and Conflict Short of War, put out by the U.S. Army War College, and in that document they actually suggest that these new technologies run counter to American values, and in order to introduce them, American values first must be changed. And then they lay out a number of scenarios by which those values could be changed, and one of them is suggesting that terrorists and international drug dealers should be declared the villains, which certainly we can agree that they're villains in that instance. What they suggest, however, is a couple scenarios. One, using radio frequency systems for disabling aircraft, causing an aircraft to crash that's loaded with suspected terrorists. Well, the problem is, you know, doing that, and they kind of rationalize, well, if it's off U.S. soil, you know, it's sort of exempt from the constitutional rules. And I don't believe that. I think everyone that serves in those capacities within our government swears an oath to the Constitution. That oath travels with them wherever they go. We expect them to treat people as we would wish to be treated, unless it's a warfare situation. In this case, what happens if they down a plane and it's not carrying terrorists, it's carrying tourists? And what happens to the due process of law? And if they can track someone and down a plane, why can't they just follow them until they land and arrest them and give them that due process of law that our country stands for, whether we're here or abroad?
You discussed the RMA, again, the Revolution in Military Affairs, and with all of these different possible applications, missile detection and defense, long-range over-the-horizon reconnaissance, deep earth reconnaissance or tomography, the creation of nuclear-size explosions, the utilization of EMP without nuclear explosions to disrupt enemy communications, weather control, mind control, the altering of the body chemistry to affect the immune system of human beings, and possibly even kill them. Obviously, this is sort of like a one-stop, all-purpose weapon system, and that is one of the things that you refer to as, again, the RMA, the Revolution in Military Affairs. One of the things that you alluded to in connection with that project is the inconsistency of these weapons or these applications of this weapon system with American law and American civic principle. You discuss in connection with the low-intensity conflict applications of some of this the views of Newt Gingrich. Reading on page 181 of Angels Don't Play This Harp, you write, "The ability of the United States to meet these challenges..." Actually, let me begin a little earlier. The foreword to Low-Intensity Conflict and Modern Technology was written by Congressman Newt Gingrich in 1986 before he rose to the position of Speaker. This position makes him currently the third most powerful position in the United States government. His views on low-intensity conflicts became relevant when considered along with the development of non-lethal technology. He focuses on creating approaches to conflict which can dispense with radicals who, in his own words, engage quietly in dirty little wars in faraway places with almost no regard for legal nicety or the technical problems of international law. The ability of the United States to meet these challenges is also discussed in the foreword, as Gingrich wrote, quote, "The organization of power in the state and defense departments and the relationships between Congress, the news media, and the executive branch are all unsuited to fighting low-intensity conflict effectively. He then goes on to discuss, quote, that some of these technologies that are implicated in Project HAARP as the just what we need to alter our approach to these conflicts because our governmental system is not well suited to that. One of the most terrifying things you get into, and we're winding down to the end of this half hour, is the potential domestic application of this technology. There may be listeners who will say, well, this is great. You know, we can use it on Saddam Hussein or drug dealers or terrorists, as you mentioned. And yet one of the most terrifying things that you discuss are the projections by the people developing this that this could be used at home. Could you tell us about that, Dr. Begich?
Sure. Actually, non-lethal weapons have been transferred into the Justice Department under joint arrangements between the Department of Defense and Justice. And the development of non-lethal weapons have a priority if they can be used domestically and for defense purposes. An interesting side note is that the Chemical Weapons Treaty we recently signed, the Weather Modification Treaty we signed in 76, and most international agreements have one exemption that people don't recognize and we need to recognize, and that's an exemption for domestic use. In other words, what we cannot use against declared enemies of the United States under these international agreements, and we cite the paragraphs and sections within our book, we are permitted to use these kinds of weapons technologies against Americans. This is fundamentally wrong. I mean, if we can't use them against an enemy, we certainly shouldn't use them against our own citizenry. And yet, parallel legislation that ought to be going in along with these international agreements should be assuring Americans that even though this is provided for within these agreements, it'll never happen. And those clauses and those laws are not on the books. My father served in the United States Congress back in the early 70s up until his death. And this is the kind of thing that, you know, we know from having a political background occurs all the time. This is not something new. When you're looking at the application of these technologies domestically, or even the fact that it can happen domestically, that's what we need to address first, and then we need to really seriously consider whether these technologies should be used at all. I mean, when you look at all of this mix in terms of how things are advancing, the idea that we can't fight these conflicts because the way we're configured as a country, well, foundationally, we need to stand for something. And then we need to find ways to address that within the context of law. And not through black projects and not through hidden agendas, but it needs to be in the open, in the public debate. We all are in this boat together, and we can figure out ways to address our international conflicts reasonably and progressively. And I think that's really where the root of it is. Our government needs to have confidence in its people because we are, in essence, that government.
Once again, in addition to the effects on the physical environment, the weapon system is being projected as changing the nature of American civic and governmental affairs. One of the aspects of this weapon system that you discuss, along with Gene Manning, Dr. Begich, are the possible unintended effects. Now, we've discussed some of the deliberate applications, and the possible blowback, as they say in the intelligence community, of these systems would include perhaps unintended weather side effects, unintended effects on biosystems, meaning human beings and animals, of some of these types of radiation, in addition to the deliberate application of this. One of the most terrifying things that you discuss is the possible overloading of the atmosphere with electromagnetic radiation and the possible implications of the Earth. Could you briefly explain, first of all, that to us, Dr. Begich, and then also, by way of concluding the broadcast, tell the listening audience more about Earth Pulse, where they can get this book and other information such as your website.
Sure. Basically, when you're looking at the energy releases that could cause cataclysmic events, nobody really knows what this kind of energy concentrations within the ionosphere will do. We do know that it can act as a trigger for releasing vastly larger amounts of energy. In the book Unless Peace Comes, written in 1969, it talks about this in the effect of creating tidal waves, earthquakes, and so on. Using energy, small amounts of energy at just the right time, adding that last straw to the camel's back that causes the system to go into chaos. And that is the kind of thing we're concerned about. It is speculative, certainly, and we acknowledge that. But nonetheless, we're in a regime in an area that is not well known, not well defined, and certainly not publicly debated in the way it should be. And these are the things that many scientists around the world are pointing to and are concerned about, not just us here in Alaska. when you look at this this whole concept and the things that we deal with, you know, it is new, it is leading edge, but at the same time, it's worthy of the kind of public discussion that's necessary within the context of these technologies. We do have a website that people can go to get additional information, and I'll give you that. It's www.earthpulse.com, and that'll get you to a lot of articles about this subject.
Dr. Begich,
in addition, it'll also link to the military site.
Could you repeat that again for people that might be scribbling notes here? Again, nice and
sure. Slow. It's www.earthpulse.com. And we also have a phone number for those that don't have access to computers, and that phone number is 907-249-9111, and that'll give you more information on our publication.
Phone number one more time, please.
907-249-9111.
Now, is that the number that people should call in order to order the book?
Absolutely.
Okay, once again, the title of the book is Angels Don't Play This Harp, subtitled Advances in Tesla Technology, co-authored by Gene Manning and Dr. Nick Begich, with whom we have been speaking. Published in softcover by the Earth Pulse Press. And for ordering convenience, I'm just going to give the ISBN number again, or for people who want to jot this down, ISBN number 0-964-8812-0-9. 0-964-8812-0-9. And that's copyright 1995. We're almost at the end of the broadcast, Dr. Begich. I would like to discuss many of these things at greater length with you, because certainly we've been taking a merciless approach to this vitally important and also very complex information. By way of conclusion, what sorts of comments would you make to the members of the listening audience, some of whom might be contemplating some drastic form of self-termination, some of whom might be disbelieving? Certainly this is a very overwhelming subject to be dealing with. What's your advice to the audience?
Sure. What's important is to understand that knowledge is power, and our intention is not to inject fear, but to create an environment of decent public debate and to inform. And I think that's really where, you know, what is the basis of so much of what we do in this country, and certainly should be the basis of any progressive steps in solving this problem. We've had one legislative hearing in Alaska. We're asking people to contract congressional delegations and ask for hearings on a national level. And we know the issue is being debated internationally as we continue to push this issue forward.
One of the things that you touch on in your book, and by way of wrapping things up, people might be overwhelmed or might be disbelieving. They might be inclined to suspect that this is going to affect somebody other than themselves. In discussing the effects of electromagnetic radiation on both the mind and the body, you refer to a Dr. Schwann, who had done much of this research for Nazi Germany and then was employed in the same capacity by the United States, and took some of the information that he had gathered from his experiments in Nazi Germany and applied it to our own situation. In a sense, we are all sort of experimental subjects in Auschwitz under the auspices of Project HARP.
You know, I think that's a fair way to state that. And I think when we look at the whole of scientific advancement, you know, people were saying things when the airplane was invented, man wasn't intended to fly. But, you know, with any scientific technology, there's good and there's bad. There are some applications to HARP that might present some very good things, but at the same time, there are risks, and we need to understand what those trade-offs are. And we need to look, you know, forward in the future progressively, but at the same time, not from a paranoid perspective, but from a perspective of progress and improving the human condition.
It has been my pleasure to be visiting with Dr. Nick Begich, along with Gene Manning, the author of Angels Don't Play This Harp, subtitled Advances in Tesla Technology. Dr. Begich, I'm sure my audience is going to want to hear more from you, and I'd like to discuss some of these subjects at greater length in future interviews. And I want to thank you on behalf of my audience for appearing on our airwaves.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that concludes our interview with Dr. Nick Begich. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.